Hello, I'm Ben Kiefer. Many people think public radio gets all of its funding from the government, and that's just not true. Members, people like you and me, are the largest source of funding. At Iowa Public Radio, that's 35%. And we can make that even stronger with your help. We hear your comments, we read your emails and letters, we know your passion for public media. Take the next step. Become a member today. Pledge online now. iowapublicradio.org.
I'm John Pemble. Rob Dillard is here this afternoon as well. And so many people are standing in line just to get up on the talk shows that we have available that allow your interaction, river to river, and talk of the nation. As we bring you these programs, we need you to know that you pay for them. Yep, you. As a member, as a contributing member to Iowa Public Radio through iowapublicradio.org. And when you call up to make a pledge to Iowa Public Radio today and today only, we will send you a year-long subscription to The Atlantic as a thank you gift. This is an offer that we have going right now when you make a pledge of any amount to iowapublicradio.org or by calling us at 800-971-8815.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Dillard, one of the reporters for Iowa Public Radio. I know you tune in to this network of stations for national coverage, NPR, BBC, PRI. Those are all initials you're quite familiar with. But another thing you're supporting by calling 1-800-971-8815 today is local reporting and local programming, as you're about to hear from River to River. Host Ben Kiefer does a fabulous job of bringing in the newsmakers from across the state to talk to you, to inform you about what's going on here in Iowa. Today, they're looking at Latino culture in the state, the fastest growing population in Iowa, the Latino population. You'll learn more about that when we start that programming in just a couple of minutes. We need your support today. iowapublicradio.org is one way to reach us. 800-971-8815 is another way. Lend your support to Iowa Public Radio.
Sometimes it's easy, very easy to forget that things aren't free. You can find news almost anywhere, and you can often absorb it without paying anything. But there's a certain point where somebody has to pay. And when it's voluntarily asked for you to pay, sometimes it takes you a while to get on board as a subscribing member. Well, that's how it works here at Iowa Public Radio. We do have the news access available for everybody, but we ask that you, when you can, pay a little bit. This helps public radio stay free of political and commercial influences because you fund it with your dollars at iowapublicradio.org or 800-971-8815.
Won't you consider becoming a sustaining member to Iowa Public Radio? It's very painless. You can take it out of your credit card. You can take it out of your banking account. How about $10 a month? Doesn't sound like much, but it adds up to $120 for a year, and that will help out this network greatly. Become a sustaining member today. $10 a month. 1-800-971-8815 or go to the website iowapublicradio.org.
And no matter what you pledge, we will send you a year-long subscription to The Atlantic magazine. That's only when you pledge today at 800-971-8815 or through iowapublicradio.org.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The contributions of Latinos to our nation's heartland, the focus of two upcoming gatherings at the University of Iowa. First, the Latino Midwest Symposium will take place later this week, Thursday through Saturday, October the 11th through the 13th. And then the UI School of Social Work is hosting another gathering, the 14th Annual Iowa Latino Conference, this weekend, October 12th through the 13th in Iowa City. And we have two people connected with those gatherings to talk about those initially. We want to focus on Latino culture, the experience of being Latino in Iowa for this entire hour. One of my guests is Santiago Vaquera Vasquez. He's an assistant professor of Spanish and Portuguese at the University of Iowa, a Chicano writer, and the co-organizer of this Latino Midwest Symposium. Santiago, welcome to our studio.
Thank you very much. I'm glad I'm here.
Joining us by phone, Gabriela Rivera. She is with the UI Center for Diversity and Enrichment, also an organizer of the Iowa Latino Conference. Gabriela, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
I want to start off by having each of you tell us a little bit about your respective events. Let's talk about Latino Midwest, that symposium, first of all. Expand on what will be happening there and why this is an important time to be exploring the issues you will.
Well, I think that that after the last census, we've seen how the Latino population has grown in the not just nationally, but also in the Midwest. If you look at the data, it says that the Latino population in the United States grew by 44%. But in the Midwest, the majority of the Midwest, the Latino population actually grew by 73%. Mm-hmm. And so there is this large population explosion of Latinos in the Midwest. But at the same time, there is also this belief that somehow the Midwest that the Latinos in the Midwest are fairly new community, and we'd like to also talk about the history of Latinos in the in this region, going back to the 19th century. So we're looking at issues of immigration, history, experiences, as well as cultural expression.
Let me follow up quickly. Why would Iowa have a population explosion of Latinos more than the rest of the country, relatively speaking?
I think I may have misspoken about the explosion, but when you look at the numbers, you see that there is this rise. In Iowa, for example, the Latino population has grown to about 5% of the state, and a lot of that has to do with with industry, mm-hmm. meatpacking plants in these smaller communities in Iowa.
You said the perception is that the Latino Iowan is relatively new, but how far back does it go?
Goes back to about the 19th century, and that would mainly because of as I explained to my students in my classes, cattle drives, railroads leading to Chicago. So wherever the Latinos, these Latino communities pass through, they would leave people behind, or people would stay and form these small or sometimes large communities.
Mm-hmm. Gabriela, you're with the University of Iowa Center for Diversity and Enrichment. Picking up on what Santiago said about the growth of the Latino population in Iowa, I understand that Latinos became the largest minority group on college campuses. Do Iowa's colleges and universities share that, reflect that growth?
Yes, definitely. That's what we have observed here through the Center for Diversity and Enrichment, is an increase in the number of Latino students coming to the University of Iowa. And definitely the Latino students is the largest minority of underrepresented students on this campus. And I'm very fortunate to work with them through the work that we do at the Center for Diversity and Enrichment. Currently, the Latino population is about 4.3% of the students that are here, and or ethnic enrollment from last fall 2011. We don't have the enrollment for 2012 yet, mm-hmm. but it tells us that we have about 1,334 Latino students, undergraduate students enrolled at this university. And I believe that probably will be the same for the other two region institutions, Iowa State and University of Northern Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the 14th annual Iowa Latino Conference coming up this weekend. You're going to focus on these changing demographics we've been talking about, but also the dynamics of Latino communities in Iowa.
Definitely. The Iowa Latino Conference was founded in 1998, and like you say, it is celebrating its 14th year. And it's this year we're partnering with the Latino Midwest Symposium. So on Friday, there will be a Latino Youth Summit where 10, 11, and 12th grade students will be coming to the Iowa Memorial Union at the University of Iowa and going through a whole day of leadership sessions. Professor Jose Limon will be the keynote speaker for the youth. He will be talking definitely on something that I believe you'd probably be really excited. The title of his talk is Clear Lake, Iowa, and the Day the Music Died. And then they will be going through different team building sessions of leadership. But we're very excited to see these high school students join us for the day. At the same time, we will be having a professional development institute for anyone that wants to be more culturally competent and be in a mix of professional talks. Our keynote for this session with the professional institute is Professor Ana Celia Centella, an expert on bilingualism and what it means to be multilingual in the United States. We're very happy to host her for the day.
I understand that she will also be speaking about linguistic intolerance, a fear of foreign language. How much do you find that to be the case, Gabriella, here in Iowa? Do you find evidence of that?
I personally have not, but I know of stories that happen to people for example, on Mexican restaurant or in the street where people are being told, you came to this country, you should learn English, which in my case, I know a lot of us do and take it very seriously. I know of a lot of Latinos that's their first priority when they arrive to this country, and especially children in schools. It's very important for kids to get immersed in the English language. I used to be a Spanish teacher at a Montessori school where actually the opposite was true. People wanted their kids to learn Spanish at a really early age. But, you know, that's a learning environment at a school. So, however, here at the University of Iowa, we have a foreign language requirement where we ask our students to at least have completed 4 years of a single foreign language in high school or to take 4 semesters in college. So, you know, I find it like sort of contradictory depending on what environment you are in. But definitely I feel very strong about these learning a foreign language. And actually that will be a topic of discussion during our Latino Institute for Professional Development, where we're going to have a panel on experts that will be talking about different community models for promoting bilingualism in children at a really young age and not like waiting until they get to college and they're being told, by the way, this is our graduation requirement. Please take 4 semesters.
Let me turn to Santiago. What about from your perspective, linguistic intolerance, a resistance to what some perceive as a foreign language in this country? English is, after all, the language of the United States. Right. We certainly know that. What is your experience, Santiago?
Well, I think that that what Ana Celia is looking at is not simply an intolerance towards Spanish, but at times also an intolerance towards this mixture of Spanish and English. And so she's a great champion of Spanglish, which I find fascinating. And as I often tell my students, I myself am an unrepentant Spanglish speaker, as I grew up in a bilingual household, and so I grew up speaking both languages. And in my conversations with friends when I used to teach in Texas, it was the same thing. We'd mix back and forth. So there are a couple of ways of looking at this notion of linguistic intolerance, and so we also have to deal with that, especially in the classroom when you have historically this idea that somehow Spanish spoken in the United States is somehow not a very good Spanish. And so when I teach my classes, I try to incorporate Spanglish as a topic of conversation to try to get the students to understand that the Spanish spoken in the U.S. is a valid Spanish, and that those Latino students who find themselves in my classes recognize that they should not be ashamed of the language that they carry.
Help us understand that, because for a monolingual English speaker, that would be akin to what? That we think that an accent from another region in the United States was not quite as good as the way we speak here in Iowa, for example?
Right. That would be one way to look at it. Definitely accent. We often talk about attitudes towards, somebody coming from, say, the South, for example.
Right.
And looking at what are the attitudes that come with accent. And so that is definitely a an important topic in looking at and looking at the role of Spanish and the use of Spanish in the United States.
Well, what do you think is behind those who resist or have a fear of the foreign language? I don't know if you've had an encounter like Gabriela described there too. What do you think is at the heart of it? What is the actual fear when people sense that there is more Spanish or Spanglish being spoken in their communities?
Right. That's a good question. I believe it comes from basically the fear of of change, that something is happening in their community when they themselves can't understand. I've had experiences. Mm-hmm. I used to teach in Pennsylvania, where I'd be speaking in Spanish with friends in cafes, and I would hear a comment from someone at another table saying English. And so
they were prompting you to speak English.
Yes, so that so these kinds of experiences I've had. And I think it comes from this very real fear that somehow the world that they know has been shifted in a way that makes them feel uncomfortable.
They feel excluded.
Right. Well, that's one way to look at it. Certainly excluded, mm-hmm. uncomfortable. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gabriela, we have just a couple minutes left, but I see that as part of the Iowa Latino Conference, you'll be focusing also on storytelling in Latino culture.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In what way will you focus on stories? Will you be telling stories? Will they be connected with the themes of your conference, for example?
Yes, actually, we're very excited that the Iowa City Public Library is partnering with us, not only to provide the space, but also to do this family story time that it's a standing hour that they do on Saturdays. So actually, Debbie Dunn at the library has been really partnered with making sure we have bilingual story time or in Spanish for the whole family. Mm-hmm. And it is a big part of our culture to learn through stories telling, and especially when we have to listen to our elders.
Do you have we have about a minute or so left. Mm-hmm. Gabriela, is there a minute-long story that you would say is typically Latino at all?
There's some story called La Llorona, the Weeping Woman. And it's about a woman that apparently lost her kids, and she's weeping and crying because she wants to find them. I know I grew up with that story when I was little in Mexico, and it really scared me when I would hear it and say, oh.
What is it trying to teach you a lesson?
Probably to listen to your mother and be good. I don't know. I actually don't like it that much myself, because I think it is really scary. And I know my mom tells me that she actually heard the Weeping Woman or Llorona, and I thought it was scary. So, but it is a book too, and it's actually, we have a beautiful display at the Iowa City Public Library where we have that book on display and some other artifacts and objects. So I hope the whole community will come together. There'll be also a Latino festival for the first time in the Pet Mall in Iowa City from 12 to 7 p.m. So it should be really exciting.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. Gabriela Rivera, we understand you have to leave. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much for your time. Muchas gracias.
You're welcome. The 14th Annual Iowa Latino Conference coming up this weekend, October 12th through the 13th in Iowa City. Santiago Vaquero Vasquez will be staying with us, I think. You can mm-hmm. stay with us for the second half
thank
hour.
You.
We'll be back and we'll talk about more of the Latino experience in Iowa, in the Midwest. Perhaps you're Latino, and you'd like to share your experience. Do you have a story that illustrates any of the things that we're talking about this hour? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Back in just a few minutes. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we're talking about Latino culture in Iowa this hour. The growing influence, the growing population
right.
of Latinos in Iowa. Mm-hmm. Santiago Vaquero Vasquez is with us, assistant professor of Spanish and Portuguese at the University of Iowa. And he's the co-organizer of a Latino the Latino Midwest Symposium coming up. That's Thursday through Saturday,
yes.
Right, Santiago?
Yes, exactly.
We have some other people who are going to jump on board in our discussion here in a moment, but please tell us a little bit about who will be coming to the symposium as speakers.
Yes, well, we have our keynotes we're very excited about. We have on Thursday, we have the historian Vicky Ruiz. She is from UC Irvine. And she'll be speaking on Thursday. On Friday, we have a really exciting a reading by Junot Diaz, the Dominican writer who won the Pulitzer won the Pulitzer for his novel *Brief Wonders Life of Oscar Wilde*, but who also recently won a MacArthur last week. And then we also have Jose Limon, who is an English and anthropology, and he'll be speaking on Saturday. And then our final sort of major super event is a concert by Lila Downs. And we also have a number of really fantastic invited speakers who you'll be speaking with.
A couple
now.
Of them, at least. Yeah, a couple of them. Right. Tell us before we do, Santiago, how can people find out more information? This is open to the public, isn't it?
It is open to the public. Everything is free, aside from the Lila Downs concert, which is sponsored through the Hancher Auditorium, through Hancher. So you'll have to purchase tickets, but everything else is open. It will be held at the University Capital Center. We have a website. It's rather lengthy, but if you do a search at the University of Iowa webpage for the Latino Midwest Symposium, you should be able to access it.
I assume some opportunity for Latino
right.
cuisine as well.
Yes, hopefully. And I would also be remiss if I didn't mention my co-organizers who both have been fantastic. Omar Valerio Jimenez from the History Department, who couldn't be here with us today, and Claire Fox from the English Department.
Jane Juffer is joining us now, Associate Professor of English and Feminist Gender and Sexuality Studies at Cornell University. You will be coming to the symposium. Jane Juffer, Professor Juffer, welcome.
Hi, thank you. Hi, Santiago.
Hi, Jane.
Your talk I see here, Jane, is what a provocative title this is. Who would Jesus deport? Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I'm writing about the town I actually grew up in Sioux Center, Iowa, up in the northwest corner of the state. And I'm writing about talking about, and it's part of a forthcoming book about the changes that have occurred in Sioux County, namely in Sioux Center and Orange City in that county, because of Latino migration. I think the Latino population there has grown about fourfold in the last 10 years. It's about 3,000 right now. And mainly focusing on the role religion has played in the integration of Latinos into the community.
Mm-hmm.
And historically, you probably know, or I'm sure most of your listeners know, that that's a very conservative Republican part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very religious. For example, everybody, when I was growing up there in the 70s, everybody that I went to school with had a Dutch last name and went to the Reformed Church of America, or the Christian Reformed Church. Now, however, what you find with Latinos moving in is that a lot of the assumptions about the homogeneity of the town and the kind of unexamined beliefs about race and language and religion have been called into question. So what I'm arguing is that for the first time you have people saying, maybe my religion, which has, you know, historically supported a Republican conservative kind of anti-immigrant politics, isn't right anymore. And in part that's because so many people have become friends and neighbors and fellow church members with Latinos.
So when you go back to where you grew up in Sioux Center, have you noticed these changes that the Latino white populations are mixing, or is there more of a segregation? How would you characterize that?
Well, I don't want to be too optimistic about it, because there are still lots of problems with racism and racial profiling, and as Santiago was describing, with intolerance about Spanish. But overall, I actually think the town has been quite remarkable and open-minded. For example, there's a hybrid Latino Anglo Reformed church in Sioux Center called Amistad Cristiana that, for the first time, I think, in that area, in that county at least, represents a real hybrid formation of Anglo-Latino Protestant faith, in which there are services in Spanish, and the Reformed Church doctrine has actually allowed itself to be challenged and rewritten to accommodate Latinos of Protestant faith. So that's one example amongst many I could give of how I think the area has actually been quite welcoming, in part because of this rethinking of religious faith.
Jane Joffer is with us of Cornell University, speaking at the upcoming symposium, the Latino Midwest Symposium, taking place Thursday through Saturday in Iowa City. Please hang on, Jane. I want to welcome as well Teresa Delgadillo, assistant professor at Ohio State University. Professor Delgadillo, welcome.
Hi, Ben.
Teresa.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be on the program, and thank you, Santiago, for inviting me to come out to Iowa.
Hi, Teresa.
Teresa, you teach Latina and Comparative Ethnic Studies there at Ohio State University. You're coming to this symposium to talk about what?
I'm actually going to be talking about a project I've been working on since 2008, which is oral histories of Latinas in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So it's another Midwestern place, not Iowa, but I think potentially there are many similarities, and certainly from some of the work I've seen of people there at Iowa on women's oral histories, migrant women's oral histories in Iowa, it seems like there might be some connections there too. So I'm going to be talking about women, women's leadership, and women's leadership in political, civic, social, community organizations.
So in a lot of ways, it seems like you, Teresa, and Jane, you have a lot in common. You grew up witnessing a small American, Mexican-American community turn into a multifaceted Latino community, and Jane Joffer did so in Sioux Center. So I wonder, what was it like growing up Latina in Milwaukee?
It was cold.
Okay.
This is so funny because this is one of the women I interviewed. There's a point in her story in which she says, and she wonders aloud, "Really, Grandpa? Why Milwaukee and not Florida?" and it's a moment that I really identify with.
Well, it is. You know, the point that you make is interesting. When you talk about European immigrants coming to North America, mm-hmm. you can really trace the Norwegians sought out, you know, Minnesota, also in Iowa, Decorah, very much the climate that they were used to in Northern Europe. And
right.
your group didn't get that.
We didn't get that. But in many ways, we built it in so many other ways. I'm really struck when another participant in my project talks about in the Mexican-American community and Mexican communities, there's this tradition of the posadas at Christmas time, which is a reenactment of Mary and Joseph's search for lodging. And they describe completely moving this inside because of the weather and the way that it unfolds in this house and the house that they had to acquire in order to make that possible. So we've had to build it, but we certainly have. And that's what's so interesting to me about the women who I have been interviewing is how much they have built that, warmth for themselves in organizations and in collaboration with others.
Teresa Delgadillo will be speaking at the Latino Midwest Symposium taking place later this week, and we have put a link on that in the Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page.
Great.
If you'd like to find out more information about that. You talked about women's studies and Latina studies, Teresa. How much of this concept of machismo is part of the curriculum? We connect that with Latino culture in a certain way, don't we?
Actually, I think that's a concept that has pretty much taken hold across the U.S. as a term that applies to can apply to men of all ethnicities.
Okay, you're not going to let me put it in that box,
no,
are you?
No, okay.
All right.
I do think that certainly the particular kinds of manifestations of that unfold in Latino cultures are things that all of the women that I've been interviewing deal with in really different ways. I was surprised to discover that there were so many leading women, women who are now quite prominent, who experienced a divorce or women who so far back, I imagine, you know, I imagine far back, who experienced domestic violence and were speaking about it. And so those sorts of struggles of women particularly are revealed in these oral histories, in their life stories. And I think that they speak about them because they were a part of their life. They were a part of the kind of obstacle or challenge that they faced in leading a community organization or in leading their family. Some women really had to confront that. So it's really, they've been so generous in sharing their stories because they recognize that there are so many young Latinas growing up in the Midwest today who don't know about the generation before them, mm-hmm. Or two generations before them. Mm-hmm. What did those women go through when they came to this part of the country?
Is that just generally in families not passed on, and for what reason?
I think there are many reasons why it's not passed on in families. Some of the women's stories themselves reveal separations and or silences around issues. So sometimes it's not passed in families, passed down in families. But more than that, there's not a general public sense of our presence in this place that is recognized, socially recognized, in ways that young Latinas can latch on to. And I think that's part of what has spurred me in this project. And I think one of the things that really struck me back in the early 90s, when I had, you know, was just a early graduate student, I went to the Historical Society. Santiago will relate to this because he's a fiction writer. And, you know, I was looking for writing fiction at the point, and I was looking for archival evidence. I wanted to know more about the history of Latinos in Milwaukee. And I knew at that point that it had been at least a 70-year history. And what I found, or what I was given, was one cardboard box of ephemera. There were announcements of events. There were some documents there. There were some random photos. There were, you know, a flyer here, a flyer there, a clipping. And it was all in this cardboard box, all jumbled up. And
it was a puzzle for you to put together,
exactly.
Sounds like. A puzzle of ephemera.
Yes, exactly. Fragments and pieces. And, you know, it really was a shocking moment because I thought, what could we know about ourselves? What could others know about us if that's all that was there?
Teresa Delgadillo is with Ohio State University. She'll be at the upcoming Latino Midwest Symposium taking place beginning Thursday through Saturday. We wanted to introduce one more guest for this half hour. Joe Henry is with us. He's in our Des Moines studio, director of Iowa's League of United Latin American Citizens of Iowa. Joe Henry, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me here.
You pronounce your acronym LULAC?
LULAC, League of United Latin American Citizens.
It's sort of the Latino version of the NAACP, correct?
There you go.
Okay. We don't have much time left, but I wanted you to tell us about the lawsuit that you're involved with against Iowa's Secretary of State's voter suppression law.
This lawsuit, we joined with the American Civil Liberties Union here in Iowa against the Secretary of State. Matt Schultz, Secretary of State, attempted to use emergency rules to purge some of the registered voters here in Iowa. There were approximately 3,500 new citizens that the Secretary of State was attempting to remove from the voter files. We felt that this was wrong.
What reason was given?
He felt that these people who he had targeted were not actually legal citizens and had not registered to vote while they were citizens. Now, the tricky thing about this is that he was using driver license records from the state of Iowa to determine whether or not somebody was a citizen. But the problem is that when people come to the state from other countries and they're illegal as non-citizens, they first get their driver's license most of the time. Later on, they become citizens and then they register to vote. But what the Secretary of State was attempting to do was just utilize this, and we felt to use this at it's kind of a political motivated type of effort to just remove people who have become new citizens.
And there's been an outcome to this lawsuit?
Well, right now we have a temporary injunction against the Secretary of State. He cannot move forward on these emergency rules. A judge here in Polk County had put that temporary injunction in place in early September, and we are very glad that that happened. Now, after the election, we're going to go back into the courtroom and then fight to make sure that these emergency rules are not used. But thankfully, nothing will happen right now. People can go to the polls. They can vote. New citizens should not worry about whether or not they have the right to vote. They do have the right to vote.
Joe Henry, you are a Latino in addition to being director of Iowa's League of United Latin American Citizens of Iowa. Mm-hmm. I wonder, because in this election cycle we've talked so much about the Latino vote and it's been courted this way and that and maybe a deciding factor in local elections all the way to the presidential election. I wonder, can you give me some sort of inside perspective of how Latinos see this competition for their vote, a good or a bad thing, or what aspects do you want to bring up?
Well, I think it's a good thing. I mean, within our culture, we've always taken pride in voting. Any Latino that you speak to who's been here for a while can tell you that they feel that it's their responsibility to vote. So we're glad that the awareness is finally focused upon us. I mean, it's been our duty. And now we have the media talking to us about what we're going to do. I mean, here in Iowa, the number of registered Latinos in Iowa has doubled since 2008. That is amazing. We went from about 18,000 registered Latino voters back in 2008 to over 35,000 now. And that's just from what we have identified over the last year.
Does that match the population growth or exceed it, actually?
It kind of exceeds it. This is a doubling, and actually over in the last 10 years, our population has doubled to 158,000 here in Iowa. So we're at about 6% of the population. But of those who about half of our adult population is now registered to vote here in Iowa, which is very important because I think the majority community does not realize. They usually assume that we're a small percentage of registered voters. We're not. Over 50%, again, of our community is registered to vote.
The Latino vote, is it a misconception to think about that as a block, a voting block?
Yes, no, maybe. Yes, no, maybe. Because many of our people in our community are very working class. So, we came here to the United States some 500 years ago, and very working class, doing blue-collar jobs and also white-collar jobs. Because we're there on those lower incomes to middle income, we sense the same type of struggles that most of middle-income America face. So when it comes to jobs, education, and health care, we're pretty much in line with a lot of those progressive ideas that have been floating around. And we're very thankful that the Affordable Health Care Act came into place. And we're also very thankful that there's been some issues addressed when it comes to immigration. But again, we're there pretty much on the progressive side of things when it comes to the issues that are important to people here in the U.S.
Are there any other misconceptions about Latinos, Latino vote that you want to bring out, Joe Henry?
Well, again, I think the misconception is that people think that we are not registered to vote. They think that we will not vote. Both of those are untrue, especially here in Iowa. Mm-hmm. As we have been analyzing the data throughout the state of Iowa, there is definitely an awareness within our community of the important issues that we face that are impacted by elected leaders.
What is LULAC doing to get Latinos out to vote?
Well, what we've been doing is, first of all, we've been identifying registered voters, and then we've been doing voter registration. Recently, we've started a postcard mailing campaign where we have now sent out postcards throughout the state of Iowa to registered Latinos, encouraging them to vote on Election Day, to look at the issues. We're going to follow that up with phone calling. We're going to be calling people who are registered voters and also encouraging them to help us register other folks within the Latino community. So there's a lot of things going on right now in the month of October and then up to Election Day. So in discussions with LULAC, we have four councils here in the state of Iowa, two of which are in eastern Iowa. The other two are here in central Iowa. That's going to be very helpful because we're in two highly populated areas. Central Iowa has about 500,000 people, and there over on the East Coast, we're looking at about 400,000 people. So lots of discussions, a lot of meetings that we're having with LULAC folks, and then just meeting with folks out in the community to discuss the importance of voting.
Okay. Joe Henry with LULAC, League of United Latin American Citizens of Iowa. Also with us, Teresa Delgadillo of Ohio State University, and Jane Juffer of Cornell University. Santiago Vaquera Vasquez, you have been listening to this last half hour. We have a minute or so left. Is there something you want to get off your chest, or something that was sparked in the conversations, the insights that were shared by Joe, Teresa, and Jane in the last couple minutes?
All I can say is that I'm very excited about the symposium, and I'm excited about the variety of talks. So I'm really looking forward to getting to see old friends, as well as to meet new ones, and to hear what work is being done on this region that I think is going to be very important.
Joe, anything you want to chip in the final seconds here?
Well, for those of us who are listening who are from the Latino community, please go to lulaciowa.org for more information about our group and what we're doing, lulaciowa.org.
Okay, thank you. Joe Henry, Director of LULAC. Teresa Delgadillo, thank you very much, of Ohio State University. Look forward to welcoming you to Iowa for the upcoming symposium.
Thank you very much.
Jane Juffer with us, Associate Professor at Cornell University. Likewise to you. Look forward to welcoming you to Iowa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And a reminder that the Latino Midwest Symposium takes place Thursday through Saturday this week, and takes a look at the history, education, literature, art, civil rights struggles of Latinos in the Midwest. If you'd like to find out more information, we have a link on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Last of all, big thanks to you, Santiago Vaquera Vasquez, for joining us
today in
our program.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, and production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.